Because you know what it's time for now, folks? It is time for... Yes, indeed. It's Arnaldo's time at 7 o'clock.
Good morning, campers.
Oh, yes. Come on in. This is Arnaldo, your host of Tommy's Holiday Camp. Welcome on this Friday night at 7 p.m. And yeah, well, I've got an interesting show tonight at about 7:15. I'll be calling Joel Druckmann, who is the mystery American, the only American who was ever in the Bonzo Dog Doodah band, the legendary British crazed band. That's all you can say, but very, very influential. And some of them are still going today, and I'll be playing one of those as well. And I'll be calling Joel Druckmann in just a few minutes, the ex-member of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. He was there when they recorded A Donut in Granny's Greenhouse, and we'll let you know what that is. It was actually called I'm the Urban Spaceman, the album over here in 1968. So anyway, let's listen to the first track on that album, and you'll hear Joel's voice as they're interviewing a few people on the street. We are normal.
We are
And here come some normals. They look like normal Hawaiians.
Well, I didn't mention what much. Oh,
do you think you're normal?
That's quite normal.
Okay, here comes one.
Well, it's nothing new to deter, really, is it? I mean, it's for a psychiatrist to deter these things, isn't it?
They like their food, and they are very nice people.
Oh, it's all right, isn't it?
I'm a fight.
Smart. Show back inside.
It's
pretty normal.
It's just not that new. It is unusual. Well, it's like a rabbit. He's got a head on him like a rabbit.
We are normal and we want our freedom. We are normal and we want our freedom.
Yes, the incredible Bunzo Dog, Doodah Band, and We Are Normal and We Dig Bert Whedon.
Now that is unusual.
Yeah,
yes,
hey.
He has a head on him like a rabbit.
Exactly. And here is the actual person who said those actual words on a donut in Granny's greenhouse, Joel Druckmann.
Ah, yes. Hello, Arnold.
Hello, Joel. Thank you so much for granting this interview.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Wonderful. You're one of the mystery men of music history.
The missing American Bonzo, as I have been dubbed.
Exactly. You know, we love our minutiae, and it's great what I've been digging up, you know.
Well, as I say, you know, my 15 minutes of fame is still running. Either I'm haunted or hunted. Take your pick. it maintains itself uniquely.
I think so. Well, they were so unique that they will live forever.
Well, they were unique, and I should say they are unique.
Yeah.
I was very lucky. I had found myself in London in 1968, and I was staying at a flat, and had brought home...
Can I just actually go back before you get to London?
Oh, sure.
Can I ask, you know, like, where did you grow up, and how on earth did you end up, you know, being a bass player in a band in London, you know?
Well, I grew up in Hollywood. I'm a true Hollywood baby.
Okay.
Born and raised here in Hollywood, California. Went to school here, began playing bass instruments ever since elementary school. I started with the trombone in elementary school, in junior high, played bassoon. And in high school, because I wanted to get into a band, I started playing the bass. Mm. And I figured, you know, how hard could it be? It only has four strings. And I went, gigged around L.A. and played and went to community college. I went to Los Angeles City College for many years. And in around 1968, I had a friend who was then living in France and said, come on over, we'll form a band and we'll play here. I said, great. So I scraped together some money, left, and went to Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, oddly enough, and in Paris, and we played. And then things weren't working out so well, and I figured my French was very poor. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to go to London. So I ended up in London, staying with some friends who I'd met in the south of France. And they had brought home a copy of The Melody Maker, which it was the trade magazine,
right.
Musical trade magazine. And in it, there was an article that said, Bonzo Dog Eats Bass Player. And I said, well, who are these guys? And it was explained to me that they're some very crazy guys, and they loon about and play music. So I somehow got in touch with Viv Stanchel and went out to his house. And he greeted me, I remember this, he greeted me in a vest made out of an American flag and played the first Gorilla album.
Yeah.
And said, well, what do you think? I said, sure. So he said, okay, well, come on out and play with us. I said, fine. And from there, it just developed. We hit it off fairly well, and I was with him for about a year, and then... things happened, and I left and came back to the United States. But it was during that year that the band changed. They were somewhat of a what they call a trad band. They were playing like kind of Dixieland-oriented stuff and comedy stuff. And when I joined the band, we kind of tightened it up and became more rock and roll oriented. I had joined them just after they had done... Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh, yes, of course.
Which, of course, they were the only other band ever featured in a Beatles film in Raymond's Review Bar. If you know the Magical Mystery Tour album, where the lads are coming down in white tuxedos and the famous black carnation of Paul, etc., they did Death Cab for Cutie, which was a send-up of like an Elvis type of tune. And I think my memory serves me correctly, I think Ringo said to either Viv or Neil that should have been released as the single, but they didn't do it.
Huh.
They, as it turns out, we recorded a little later on, Urban Spaceman. And I never got it. I thought, you know, I thought they were talking. I said, who's Irwin Spaceman? that's true. And finally I got it. And that was released and produced by, of course, Apollo C. Vermouth.
Uh-huh.
Now, the code name. And yes. I was the one actually that coined the name. We wanted to stand on our own merit, and we didn't want anyone to know who was producing the single.
Yeah.
Well, of course, everyone knew anyway. it was Paul McCartney, and it, you know, big deal. So I think it went to number 4 in the UK, and then it did fairly well here as well. And as a follow-on to that, we were coming back from Rhyl, North Wales.
North Wales, yeah.
And we had this band car. I think it was a Mercury station wagon. It's amazing that I have a memory of this. You know, it's only 40 years. Of course, I was 7 at the time. But we were coming back, and I said, I got an idea. Let's pick up a hitchhiker, and we'll all put them on like we're doing stuff. And I think one of the band pretended they were. I think Roger pretended he was deaf.
Okay.
And we were just, and so I took off all of my clothes. There's a stranger in the car. And I took off all of my clothes and began telling him a story about my teacher, Mr. Apollo, who would look at trees and they would come out of the ground, and he was a flora humanist. He would eat flowers and stuff. And actually, I think Viv and Neil got together and wrote Follow Mr. Apollo based on that story that I told in the car.
That and how did the hitchhiker fare?
You know what? I have no idea. Didn't have an idea where he went after that. He's probably somewhere running a major company by now.
Exactly, called Apollo Inc.
Yeah, really.
That was into that. You know, there is a new Bonzo book out called Jollity Farm. I don't know if you've read that yet.
I have not.
Okay, so it's got lots of all sorts of tidbits. So, and one of them was that, you know, again, that I think it was Legs Larry Smith said that that you'd played with the mothers of invention and that you were a draft dodger.
Well, let me correct that. I never actually played with the mothers. I tried for a long time to get into that band, and I did talk with Frank about it, but it never really happened. When I got back here to the States, I actually formed a band with Ray Collins, who was in the Mothers at the time, and that went on for quite a while. But as far as being a draft dodger, thanks, Larry. no, I wasn't. I was found unsuitable for military service.
Okay.
It was the Vietnam War had just 1968 was just heating up, and I had left. I was not suitable for the draft.
Yeah, yeah.
For one reason or another, but no, I was not dodging the draft, Larry. Thanks a lot.
I suppose we thought any American was over there was doing that most probably.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I wasn't.
Okay.
Or, you know, overtly, anyway.
Yeah. Now, it must have been, I mean, you hadn't really been exposed to English or British humor before like that, and you were suddenly dropped into this totally manic band. It must have just been, I don't know, how did you find your feet?
Well, I'll tell you, I had, being exposed to British humor, couple things. One, I had seen I'm All Right, Jack, of course, which was a very funny film, a British film. And I was familiar with the Goons, Spike Milligan and Peter Sellers, of course, and those guys. And I had seen Running, Jumping, Standing Still, the Richard Lester film. So I knew a little bit about British humor. But my sensibilities were such that it just kind of fit. For whatever they were doing, I was able to play off of it, and a lot of it was very spontaneous on stage. So we had a rough idea that was somewhat scripted, but the bits that would evolve out of this madness, it just came to me. And again, we were all very young. We really were. We were in our 20s. And looning about, you know, I mean, it was quite a period of time in the 60s, and as you can imagine.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, Viv and Neil, well, all of them, actually, but principally Viv and Neil, they were art students and very extremely creative. Probably some of the most creative guys I'd ever been around, and it just totally evolved.
Right, just everyone being together. I mean, you're obviously being on the stage, but like in rehearsals or in recording, how was it much more structured, or was it just as crazy?
No, I think the recording part of it actually was pretty straight ahead. We knew what we had gone over this stuff in rehearsals, so we had a pretty good idea of what we were doing. The sound you hear on Urban Spaceman of that whirling trumpet thing was what Viv did was he took a trumpet mouthpiece, and they were all multi-instrumentalists. Roger Ruskin Spear and Rodney Slater both played several wind instruments. And Neil, of course, plays guitar and piano, and Viv as well. Larry sort of played drums. And I'll tell you a story about that in a minute. But what Viv did with that was he had a piece of tubing. At the end of the tube was a funnel stuck in the tube. So he would blow into this tube and then wave it around his head to get that sound. I mean, and then, of course, Roger was always building these crazy devices, like in the tune Trouser Press, for example.
Yeah, and maybe I'll play that in a minute.
There's an actual, yeah. He had an actual trouser press that he would bang, he would bang together to create that sound. So, and of course, his father, Ruskin Spear, was a very famous still life artist. Mm. So these guys were around art and creativity, and they were, I don't know if it mentions it in Jollity Farm, but the name, the original name is the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
Right.
And the doodah was an actual Dadaist takeoff. They were very much influenced by the Dada movement, or at least initially. That's how the, and then they, when they became more rock and roll, they dropped the doodah part of it.
Right.
And yeah. It was an actual cartoon character, Bonzo Dog. And I think on Let's Make Up and Be Friendly, that dog is on the album cover.
Oh, yeah, that cute little
that's
Boston
actually
Terrier
a Bonzo Dog.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there really is something.
Yeah, there actually was.
Oh, beautiful. Now, on the track I just played was We Are Normal, and we hear you at the beginning. Now, you were doing some live recording out on the streets with Viv for that, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, very true. Here's what happened. We were, and I can't remember the studio. Willesden Green sticks in my head, but it could have been anywhere. So here I am. Walking around with a microphone with a high school Letterman sweater with a large B on it, which was stood for the high school that I went to at the time, but it worked out for Bonzo Dog. And here's Viv in his underwear with a balaclava hat on with rabbit ears. And people would walk by, and I would say, no, we're talking let's say, now, what do you think? Do you think that guy's normal? And, people would say, and I said, what is normal? And someone said, short back and sides. And then someone said, as I recall, well, that's not for me to deter, is it? That's for someone else. That's for a psychiatrist to deter. And he said, now, that is unusual. He has a head on him like a rabbit. That was the bit where he was just away from me, and I would point to him, and there he was in his underwear and a balaclava hat with rabbit ears. I mean, these are the kind of things that went on, both on stage and off.
Street theater on the stage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was truly spontaneous. A lot of it was very spontaneous.
Yeah, which is often the best way, isn't it, where it just comes out, explodes out.
Absolutely.
Now, a couple of other quotes or things I've got from Jollity Farm, that your nickname in the band was the Red Baron.
Well, probably. costumed with stars and stripes. I had red and white striped trousers and a blue blouse with white stars on it, and I affected a flying cap at the time as well.
P-type of Snoopy, cap.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you, in history of the Bonzos, I think there's some shots of that.
Oh, okay. And some other quotes. They called you a general vagabond and a lovable rogue.
Oh, how sweet. Yes, I am, aren't I? I did get on with them quite well, surprisingly. Some issues arose toward the end of my tenure with them. But
was that because, now, one thing they did say was that you were a bad harmonica player.
Oh, yeah, well.
Is that true?
Probably. Yeah, they hated my harmonica playing, which was fine. And that's okay, too. I'll admit to that. Yeah, I was a pretty awful harmonica player. There are those that say I was a pretty awful bass player, too, but I've managed to make somewhat of a living at it, so I can't be that bad.
Indeed.
Although, who knows? Yeah, no, my harmonica playing probably left a lot to be desired.
Now, one thing we were chatting about the other day, one of the gigs, was it one of your first gigs at the Royal, you were playing at the Royal Albert Hall?
Yeah, we did a huge show at the Royal Albert Hall with a whole lot of different other groups, and we usually started our gigs with Hail Britannia, and then what would happen is Roger would build a bomb, an explosion, and it would go off, and then we would we blew up the amps and we would mime the tune.
Oh, okay.
Well, Roger decided since it was the Royal Albert Hall, he would build a super bomb to really for the effect. And there must have been there was a bank of amps. I mean, it stretched the entire stage. God knows how many amps and speakers there were. And actually, the bomb actually did blow out all of the speakers and amps. For a period of time. You and I were somewhat put in contact via, you were in the UK, I guess, and you saw three Bonzos and a piano and saw Roger, and Roger said that Keith Emerson actually had contacted them, had seen the show, which is how you and I got in contact.
Right.
Through Roger. Well, Keith, funny story. Keith, I'm teaching this class at Santa Monica College, teaching history of rock, and this was about a couple years ago. And this young woman came up to me and said, "Oh, my boyfriend was in a band in the '70s." And of course, you know, I hear this all the time. You know, "Oh, I'm in a band.
Right.
My boyfriend's in a band." And I said, "Oh, really? What's his name?" And she said, "Keith Emerson." And I said, "Oh, you mean from the Nice?" Which is, of course, we reunited, and Keith mentioned, he said, "You forgot that we were together on the bill at the Royal Albert Hall in '68. So, so we've managed to maintain our friendship back, you know, after a 40-year absence. Of course, he's gone on with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and again, he's now touring with Greg Lake again. And I think I just got an email from him saying he was in Cincinnati, having returned from Frankfurt. And I wondered, what's worse, Frankfurt or
Cincinnati,
or, Cincinnati or Cleveland? It was
Cleveland.
Yeah, but he's due here in April, the 24th and 25th. I think he and Greg Lake are going to play the Orpheum in downtown L.A.
Oh,
so. I'm working at both those days, doing something else, playing the Cowboy Festival in Santa Clarita. So I won't be—that's for sure. But I won't be—I won't be able to see him. But we do have dinner every once in a while together.
Oh, lovely! Nice connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the things we were talking about Urban Spaceman now, and you know, Paul McCartney produced it. Now, you were at a very interesting point when he started playing the piano.
Oh yeah, he said he was you know, dashing in and out. And we were between takes and stuff. And by the way, the engineer on that tune was Gus Dudgeon, And Gus, of course, went on to produce Elton John.
Oh, yeah.
Gus died a few years ago. But So Paul's sitting at the piano, and he goes over with Neil and says, oh, I just wrote that. And he played Hey Jude prior to that being released. So we got a smidgen of that.
A preview, yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. And another funny story. Funny to me. I don't know if it's funny to anybody else. So we had this manager, Jerry Braun. And, of course, no one was to know that Paul was in the studio with us.
Hmm.
So his wife, Lillian, gets on the phone and says, mind you, this is the manager's wife. She says, I can't talk to you right now. I'm in the studio with the bongos. in my mind for some reason. But, so Paul previewed Hey Jude for us, basically, just sitting at the piano and noodling this tune.
Wow, that's beautiful. I love it. Well, you're listening to Joel Druckman, the mystery American from the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. He played on Donut in Granny's Greenhouse. Now, a lot of Americans don't know what a Granny's Greenhouse is or a donut in it.
And I don't either.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, it's Granny's Greenhouse is an outside toilet. And the donut is the toilet seat.
Oh, well, see, now I've learned, after 40 years, I've learned something. Oddly enough, it was released here as Urban Spaceman.
That sounds wise.
But in the UK, it was released as Donut and Granny's Greenhouse. And if you look at the album cover, or even the CD cover, I guess, I'm cut in half.
Oh, yeah.
Partly. What happened was... they wanted to redo a tune called Little Sir Echo.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if this is in Jollity Farm.
It is.
All right, so the bit is, and I found it, well, I'll get into that, but the bit was that I would be carried out, Vivian was about 6'2", probably, at least well over 6 feet, and I'm not quite that, I'm like 5'7", 5'8". In those days, I was 5'8". So I was to be carried out and then sat on Viv's lap, and then the tune would go, he would sing Little Sir Echo, how do you do, hello, and I would go, hello, like a dummy.
Right.
And at the end of the bit, he would leap into my arms as like, you know, the reversal of the ventriloquist and the dummy bit. And I said, absolutely not. I refuse to do this. And I think that was part of the demise of my leaving. I said, Little Sir Echo is just enough to throw me over the edge. So, and then they got Dennis Cowan, who I did meet subsequently. And Dennis was a wonderful musician, wonderful bass, really a wonderful guy, and fit in. Because they weren't going to have another bass player. They had run into so many trouble, so much trouble with bass players. Me and Dave Clegg and... just couldn't find anybody that fit, and they heard Dennis playing, and they went in and talked to him, and he joined the band, and he was he died of peritonitis, and he really was a wonderful bass player, and I'm sorry he's gone, because he did the American tour with them, and fit right in, which tends to make me wonder about his mental state.
Right. So there's got to be a question on anybody who played with him.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I mean, the places you... It was really wide varieties of places. I mean, you went from the Royal Albert Hall to, like, Northern English Working Man's Club to the Middle Earth, you know, the Psychedelic Club, All Night Club, to Top of the Pops. You were sort of...
Klook's Clique and the Roundhouse.
Mm-hmm.
We played in Switzerland, which was pretty unique.
Yeah. I don't know what they would have thought of...
we played in Basel, Basel, Switzerland, which was pretty wild. But we did we had to make a living. So,
right.
You know, real North Wales. It was, you know, the entire stretch of the UK, as well as getting into on the continent.
Right. That's quite a stretch, I would say, you know, in terms of just just locations in terms of, you know, say a working men's club to the Middle Earth. You know, it was just such a. I mean, I think Roger said you didn't change your act at all.
No.
So it was just whatever happened.
Playing working men's clubs. You need to explain what those are, because it's you know, you'd have like day laborers. You know, at the bar drinking, you know, pints, et cetera. It wasn't like the scene that comes to mind is the Blues Brothers in that Texas bar. You know, I mean, without the netting in front. But right. that's kind of what it was. It was pretty rough and tumble.
Yes.
You know, and here's this band doing God knows what with these people. You know, whether they figured out what's this? You know,
right?
You know, it was unique. I mean, we did play some upper end venues, but there were some times where you think, oh, I don't know about this one.
Why do they book us here? Yeah, I love it.
Well, we ran the gamut.
Yeah, and now on Irwin Spaceman. Now I read that there was actually a promotional film for that called The Adventures of the Son of Exploding Sausage. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we were somewhere. interestingly enough, that's the album cover that you see. We were in some remote forest or something, running around, and I think if you look carefully. I was wearing tights, purple tights, and angel's wings. Viv's got those two Irish wolfhounds.
Right.
I think one of them is dressed as a prehistoric animal. I think that's Rodney with horns, et cetera. And we were just looning about. I mean, this was pretty unique considering, you know, videos were unique at the time. Now, I think they were kind of pissed off when I left, so they cut me out of virtually every scene of this, with the exception of the last scene, because I'm right in the middle. We're all walking toward the camera, and I'm right in the middle, and they couldn't cut
they
me
couldn't
out.
Cut it.
So I think that I've seen it once or twice. Let me backtrack. When I left them and I came back to the States, and decided, if I'm going to be serious about music, I should really, you know, study, et cetera, and ended up going to the University of Southern California, getting a degree in music history and literature, and then going on and getting a graduate degree in music performance. And I had won a position for an orchestra in Israel. I didn't take the job for a bunch of reasons, but and then I quit playing. I quit playing for a long time because I had burned out and I wasn't, I mean, before I quit, I had recorded with John Cale. I did Paris 1919 with John. Oh. And I did a bunch of albums with John Fahey, the great American guitar player.
Yes.
And I had done a lot of commercials. I'd done part of the soundtrack for, Big Wednesday with Basil Polidorus. So I was working in L.A. Mm-hmm. And I was doing stuff. And I just burned out.
Yeah.
And quit playing. And I went to work in industry and was doing stuff. And all of the history of the Bonzos completely didn't list me at all in playing. And it wasn't until, I think, the Rough Guide of Rock and two ladies in particular, Bonnie Rose, who does a lot of stuff for Neil on his website, and Lori Weiland, who I contacted. Somehow I got so pissed off that I wasn't getting any credit. Not, you know, never mind the money, but the credit, just let them know. Indeed, you know, I was the guy, and I'm the voice you hear at the beginning of the record. And if you listen carefully, there are things like raw meat, which I yell out on certain cuts and stuff like that.
Right.
So I contacted both Bonnie and Lori, and I was living in North County, San Diego. I was living in Leucadia. And they came down to interview me and actually spent several hours interviewing me and then posting this interview, and it still may be around. I think I haven't gone to the website, but it was on Neil's website and the history of the Bonzos, whatever. And they were very kind, and we're still very close friends. I talk to Bonnie pretty regularly, and she's we saw Neil when he was here, about 6-8 months ago. He was doing the Secret Policeman's Other Ball for Amnesty International. And I saw Neil then. I also played with Neil at Club Lingerie about, a couple years ago now. So, and he's due here in L.A. April 30th. He'll be at McCabe's. And he's at Cobb's in San Francisco, I think, April 28th. But if you go to his website, you can see where, if you're interested in finding out where Neil is, he's going to be in Ontario, Canada. He's going to be in Northern California. So he's back doing a lot of stuff. So I imagine I will see him on the 30th when he's here in L.A.
Oh, great. Yes, I saw him a couple of years ago at Cobb's in San Francisco. He was just fabulous.
Yeah, well, he's he's extremely talented. There's no doubt. And people like, Keith Emerson's a big Bonzo Dog fan and a big Neil Innes fan. And people like Joe Walsh, I think, turn up. And he has quite a following. I mean, he's a wonderful songwriter.
Yep.
And very clever. And I guess we're friends again.
Yeah.
So, I just wish him nothing but the best because he's really a pretty good guy.
Oh, excellent. And now, tell everyone what you're doing now.
I'm teaching at Santa Monica College. I teach a history of rock and roll, and I'm playing with a couple of country bands. I'm playing with Skeeter Mann and the Lost Canyon Rangers. Skeeter was just nominated for Country Artist of the Year with the Western Music Association. So that's a pretty good band. We're playing the Cowboy Festival in Santa Clarita, April 24th and 25th, and I play with this great songwriter, Ben Rombatz, and a multi-instrumentalist who's very talented by the name of Scotty V. We're trying to get something going. Ben recorded in Nashville, so I do that. I play with a big band, like in terms of like bassy stuff, and Sammy Nestico and Tom Kubis and Gordon Goodwin stuff. That band's been together about 25 years. I've been with them about 5.
Mm.
It's a 17-piece band. I do that once a week.
Well, that's a nice sound.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a great band. I keep my jazz chops up to some extent. And try to freelance around. And I was with the Marina Symphony for a while and Santa Monica Symphony. And I just kind of let that go because I just didn't have time to concentrate on that. But I'm still playing. And I'm available for bar mitzvahs and
wedding brisses,
whatever you've got going. My time really is spent right now between Skeeter Mann, the Lost Canyon Rangers, and Ben's band.
Yeah. Oh, great! Yeah, don't ever give up music again.
No, I can't. I really can't. I did for a very long time, and I was selling stuff, data communications equipment, and my current SO. Significant other. I'm her SO on good days and her SOB on bad days. Said to me, she said, "Why are you doing this? You're an accomplished musician. You know, you really have a knack for this. You should be playing music." So around the time of my divorce, about 15 years ago, I got back into this. So and I'm much happier, not having to worry about other stuff, and being around young people who are pretty creative gets me off as well. So that's a lot less stressful.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, coming to it from a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible, Joel. I think time is running out for us, that is fabulous. You've given us a great insight into the doings of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, who are my favorite band, and a couple of other, even a few other people on this station. We love the Bonzos. They're not just a neat niche band anymore. People love them. Even some young kids do.
Well, it's remarkable that it's been 40 years since we were looning about on stage. And like I said, we were all very young. We really were, and there's still an interest in this these crazy people.
Yeah.
You know, the bad news is poor Viv is gone.
Right,
and it's good to know that three Bonzos and a piano are back, and Neil, of course, is still doing it and doing it very well. And, you know, I do my thing. So it's, you know, Dennis is gone.
Dennis died.
And so it's it is remarkable, you know. And let me just say this. If I will respond to email if you want to do that, if you're, you know, you want to email me.
Yes.
Let me give you an email.
Okay.
And you can do that at Druckmann, D-R-U-C-K-M-A-N, _, Joel, @ smc.edu.
Okay, so
remember, it's a college site, so if it goes into spam, I don't get it. But
right,
that's how you can. If you want to reach me, that's I'm more than happy to respond to emails.
Okay, the Bonzo people out there, you can chat with Joel Druckmann.
There you go. Arnold, I really appreciate you getting in touch with me. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. We want to get the full picture of the Bonzos. It means a lot to a lot of people.
Well, like I said, I was very lucky, right time, right place to end up with these guys, and you know, I can't thank you enough.
Oh, it's brilliant. I'm going to play the trouser press. Now you do the beginning of that normally, don't you? So,
God, yeah, do you like soul music? I do the trouser press, baby.
One, two, three, kick.
There you go. and then you'll hear Roger clapping away on this on an actual trouser press.
Beautiful.
Which is, you know, a thing to press trousers. But that was, yeah.
Totally classic. And
totally
it's now classic. It's a newspaper. It became a newspaper, didn't it?
I believe so.
Yep.
And of course, you know, Death Cab for Cutie, of course, got their name. That band got their name from the Bonzo's Death Cab for Cutie.
Exactly. So it lives on forever.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, thank you so much, Joel.
Arnold, anytime.
Really appreciate it.
And thank you folks out there for, you know, putting up with my 45 minutes of ranting.
Thank you.
You bet.
One, two, three, kick. Everybody, clap your hands. Ooh, you're looking good. Are you having a good time?
Yeah!
I sure am.
Yeah!
Do you like soul music?
No.
We'll do the trouser press, baby. One, two, three.
Cold bunker.
You're so savage, Roger.
Press those.